We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. That fine gentleman over there is always Dan Rubenstein. Sir. How are you, brother?
I'm always excited to speak with you, Ty. Nothing ever changes. And perhaps it's because you are my one outlet to humanity as I sit here in a basement all day. But you're a good outlet. If you're going to be that person for me, that's pretty great. So I'm very good. We have an incredible treasure trove of quality questions that are both going to get released in Q&A form to the public. And then a much longer, more detailed, personal version.
That's right.
Will be released on verballers.com. So I'm excited for everybody to hopefully get their questions weighed in on. And if you feel like your question might have been weighed in on, but it's on verballers.com, I'm not saying you need to sign up. That's a personal choice for you and your wallet. But maybe poke around and see what's doing over there, because we've got a pretty exciting our winter wonders, our bowl pick'em pool.
It's coming
to
up.
To the stars.
It's coming.
One of one prize.
We're not done everything. Yet with the run the board, which is coming very big and pivotal week here in week 14. However, yes. Winter wonders is getting awfully big in the window.
Yes.
We're very excited. So go on out to verballers.com if you want to hear the full version of this. But a lengthy part one, nonetheless, will be posted on the public feed because we got a bunch of questions, as we typically do on these big, long Q&A episodes. We sourced questions not just from Patreon, but also from Twitter, from Instagram, from email, really all of the channels that we have at our disposal.
Mm-hmm.
We put a call out and said, folks, give us your questions. So I've got the list in front of me. You've got the list in front of you. This episode driven by our good friends over at Geico. We thank them for their tireless support all throughout this college football season. Don't forget to go on out again to verballers.com if you were ever so inclined. And again, many of you are going to be listening to this, I hope, before Friday. We've got a live show in Atlanta.
Yes, we do.
We've got a live show in Atlanta. I've got my gear right over here. You can't see it on the camera. I've got all my gear packed up nicely, neatly.
Look at you.
I need to do some tests to make sure that we didn't break anything, because really, New York got out of hand, as you know.
Right.
But I've got it here. We are psyched. We are ready. We're locked on content, which maybe is the earliest we've ever been locked on content for a live show.
Yes.
It is going to be a banger. I am excited for this. Come on out. Terminal West, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, I believe, is start time for the show.
Yeah, it's basically a happy hour show. You could still go out to dinner after. You could still have yourself an evening.
Totally.
We're going to go watch the Pac-12 championship together at a nearby bar. And by together, I mean, let's all meet up and eat some tenders and, I don't know, macaroni and cheese balls, some potato skins, whatever it is we have to do. I'll have my, you know, beer and a half or whatever it takes. It's going to be great. SolidVerbalLive.com. Only a handful of tickets left. go check out the tickets. If you're in or around or can get to Atlanta, this is a big one.
Let's do it.
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
You've got mail
on the Solid Verbal.
That is one of the few sound effects that we've had since
on the Solid Verbal.
Oh. Big fat elbow over there, huh? Old sausage fingers Hildenbrandt.
It happens sometimes. I was going to say that is one of the few sounds that we have from day one. We never changed out the mail sound. It's been with us since 2008.
Yeah.
I know many of you listening are as well. So thank you for your tireless support. Our first questions come to us courtesy of EJ and Brad via Patreon over at verballers.com. EJ wants to know, what is Wisconsin's ceiling with Luke Fickell? And Brad wants to know, what made Luke Fickell the right choice at Wisconsin over Jim Leonard? This felt like Leonard's to lose. I'm not convinced he did anything during his interim time to lose it. So two questions there bundled together with respect to Luke Fickell. Of course, Luke Fickell announced as the next head football coach at Wisconsin. It's a big deal. It's a big hire. Yes. I'm not going to say it's a shock hire, but we had been led to believe for a good long time that there were only a handful of schools Luke Fickell might leave Cincinnati for. One being obviously Ohio State, another maybe Notre Dame, but all within that Big Ten footprint, right? That was sort of what we came away believing after the turmoil of last season in the coaching carousel world. So Luke Fickell has now decided to take this job, Dan. What makes him the right choice and what's his ceiling?
It's a fascinating hire. And it, you know what? I thought about it a little bit more after it happened because it didn't come out of nowhere, because obviously the interest in Luke Fickell has been pretty widespread these past few years with his success at Cincinnati. I thought about Chris Peterson, right? Waiting for the right place. You know, had talked to USC. There was interest in UCLA, Stanford, all over the place, the SEC. And he wanted something that fit him. And so he ends up at Washington. And so I think his recruiting ceiling probably isn't as high as Chris Peterson and what he was able to accomplish at Washington, because there's just a limited number of recruiting powers out west. And so Washington was able to take advantage. What Luke Fickell brings to Wisconsin should be better recruiting than where they were under Paul Christ, probably similar defensive ceiling, which is to say excellent, full on excellent. The difference being, Cincinnati seemed to be more of a transfer destination for Big Ten schools, for guys who didn't work out for whatever reason. Obviously, we saw Jerome Ford coming from Alabama. And the other difference is the best of Desmond Ridder can be attributed to whatever extent to being developed to a playoff caliber quarterback, something we haven't seen from Wisconsin.
Well, yeah.
So I think it is my opinion that Luke Fickell is a more modern head coach than Paul Christ was, for better or worse, because there were a lot of old school things that, you know, we can sort of harangue about, if that's the correct
good
use
word.
Of harangue.
Very good word.
There's a lot of very old school things in terms of keeping roster together, in terms of, you know, not playing players until they were ready. And it really showed with the success that Wisconsin had under Paul Christ in the trenches for a long time. What I think Luke Fickell will do, and what I think his ceiling is sort of, I think, what it was for Mark D'Antonio at Michigan State. Right place, right time, right defense. If either Michigan or Penn State or Ohio State is sort of floundering a bit, and so that's where we were with Penn State when Mark D'Antonio was there, and to a lesser extent Michigan when Jim Harbaugh was relatively new, or when it was Brady Hoke Michigan. Right place, right time. Wisconsin can go from a ceiling of Big Ten championship game, but we're now going divisionless, which makes it a little trickier for a school like Wisconsin. I think he can get Wisconsin right place, right time to a every so often lightning in a bottle late season playoff conversation. If things break right, we're talking about a playoff coach. We're talking about a coach who has used lesser talent to beat Notre Dame on the road, who has developed high-level NFL talent. And with the recruiting connections he has in the Midwest, I do not think it's unfair for Wisconsin fans to expect competing for the Big Ten crown every so often and being a double-digit win program
right,
more often than not. How about that?
Well, you have to figure if he can take Cincinnati to the playoffs, he can 100% get Wisconsin there, especially
different schedule,
but especially in an expanded universe. Remember, we're going to 12 here in a matter of 2 to 3 years. So with so many pieces already in place, the program's, I think, at a relatively good spot. It helps to have the bones of a good defense, which they do have now as a starting point.
Somewhat. Not as much, but yes,
not as much as before, but still, it's not starting from scratch here. I think he makes them competitive, more competitive, right away. It may take some time to get the right skill guys in place,
right,
but I think this is a slam dunk hire over the long haul. And to the question that Brad was asking, why not Jim Leonard? I think that is the point there.
Yeah.
Luke Fickell's done this for a while. Luke Fickell has, I've got his record here, has been very successful, to say the least. 57 and 18 as a head football coach, but 8 of those losses came in year one when he was starting over, right? Yeah. When he was basically starting over. So this is a guy who's proven that he can build a program, that he can do it over the long haul. Jim Leonard will probably, could probably do that for somebody else, but Luke Fickell is much more of a known quantity at this point.
He also... Yeah, you're totally right. And The Athletic had a piece a couple years ago, I believe, about Luke Fickell as a recruiter and how much he blanketed the state of Ohio. And so we talked about this. Cincinnati recruited on par with like a mid-tier Power 5 program.
Yes.
And so, which makes sense, given the success he had and the NFL players that were developed at Cincinnati. And so what I expect for Wisconsin on the recruiting trail is... for Luke Fickell to be tireless in the state of Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, wherever talent is in the Midwestern footprint, and continue to, you know, Wisconsin has had success. You know, Graham Mertz is from Kansas, I believe. They've gone outside of the Midwestern footprint to recruit somewhat. But if there was a criticism of Paul Christ near the end that didn't have to do with the offense and lack of improvement and, you know, development of receivers, et cetera, it was that recruiting was not taken as seriously as the teams Wisconsin positions itself against in Madison.
Yeah.
And so I think that has already changed. That changed the second Luke Fickell and that plane touched down in Madison.
Yeah, I mean, let's forget about the ceiling for a second. If
Please.
We could, at a minimum, I don't think you have to worry about lowering the floor, which was sort of the conversation we started to get into with the way things headed now with Wisconsin over the last year, year and a half. I think you'll see consistent results the way Wisconsin fans are accustomed to seeing consistent results.
Right.
I think you will see strong defense in the way that Wisconsin fans are used to seeing a very strong defense. You know,
of course.
Maybe it needs a bit of repairing, but it'll get there with Luke Fickell. He's that kind of coach. You will absolutely see that improvement on offense as well, because Fickell has shown in his time at Cincinnati that he can adapt to the personnel. We saw him do it this season, right?
Yeah.
Immense turnover on offense. It wasn't as good of an offense, but it was still very, very reputable and still very, very solid and still very much in the conversation for the best group of five team. Mm-hmm. I don't think it bears repeating, but part of the problem with the Paul Christ offense is that it was very rigid and pretty stubborn.
Right.
So just marginal improvements on that front on offense make Wisconsin a much, much better team. Certainly within the Big Ten West now as it stands, I know that's going away, but Fickell will improve that side of the ball ever so gradually. And I think that's what will ultimately raise that floor, make the ceiling more attainable for the Wisconsin Badgers. I also think, and we didn't mention this.
Yeah.
This strikes the perfect balance between one, needing new blood, and two, not sacrificing your identity to get it.
I agree.
Luke Fickell feels to me like he's that happy medium where it's more of a firmware upgrade as opposed to a full-on new operating system, which is really what you want when you're going after a new head coach.
Right.
Someone that feels like your program, but isn't going to go so drastically in a different direction that it's going to be new and different and it's going to take a while to actually see the results of it. So I love the hire. I think it's a slam dunk.
As do I. And we'll also mention, though, he is not a Wisconsin guy.
No.
And so measured against it, I know somebody asked, why not Jim Leonard? You know, in comparing Luke Fickell to Jim Leonard has coached, I think, at precisely one school at which he played. Is that correct?
That's
you
correct.
Can fact check that for me.
I believe that's
but that
correct.
That is my understanding, that he has only coached at Wisconsin. He's a younger dude, late 30s, around 40, something like that. Not crazy young, not Charlie Weiss Jr. young at 28 or 9 or whatever. But why Luke Fickell? Luke Fickell has proven himself
exactly
as an excellent head coach. And so I know there has been this run of coaches, I guess Gary Anderson exempted. I forget, but I don't think he was at Wisconsin on any level, meaningful level before, you know, jumping from Utah State to Wisconsin. But obviously Brett Bielema as a defensive coordinator at Wisconsin, Paul Christ as an offensive coordinator at Wisconsin, that the romantic Wisconsin guy move would be to elevate Jim Leonard. And I don't think Wisconsin was against it, but I think they probably needed to be told no by Luke Fickell and maybe somebody else before saying, okay, let's roll the dice. This guy understands, you know, what works, what doesn't work, the culture, whatever, at Wisconsin. But if you are the Badgers, not to say Jim Leonard would have been settling, because he got to audition for the role, and I'm sure he ingratiated himself really well to those in power there. But if you see yourself as a team competing for Rose Bowls, which Wisconsin should, you owe it to go for the biggest names who will listen and sit in a room with you. You owe it to the fan base. You owe it to the program. And I think it's going to work really, really well.
I really like the hire, and I think you hit the point that is very, very important there for Wisconsin fans. Though it would have been the romantic thing to elevate Jim Leonard, Luke Fickell is much more of a sure thing at this point. Like, there's a very, very low degree of risk here associated with Luke Fickell as compared to, let me get into the next question, pro transition, Dan. We're podcasters after all. Kelsey Cardinal, hello, Kelsey on Instagram, says, I'm an Auburn alum. How should I feel about Hugh Freeze?
Yeah.
So this is a different conversation altogether when we talk about Hugh Freeze. Much like this episode, there are football elements and non-football elements that we need to consider here.
Yeah.
On the football field, Hugh Freeze has gone 83-43 in 10 seasons. It's pretty good. Notably, he's had one losing season out of those 10, I believe his last season when he was in Oxford before things fell apart at Ole Miss.
Right.
He's a pretty good football coach. I don't view this as something that makes Auburn as a sudden threat in the SEC, SEC West, because the West is a lot harder now than it was when he left. But he's a good football coach.
Yeah.
He's a good football coach. The numbers would bear that out. Off the field, look, I can't tell you how to feel there, right? He was run out of Ole Miss for recruiting violations.
He does a pretty good job telling you how to feel about Hugh Freeze as a person. Continue.
Exactly. The recruiting violations, there was also that, shall we say, scandalous pattern of phone calls that came to light with his call log.
Well, it wasn't just the calls, but yeah.
Right. I mean, there are things with direct messages to sexual assault victims in his time at Liberty. So there's like a whole slew of off-field stuff. And, you know, we kind of have to consider that as well when we're looking at whether or not this is a hire worth making. I'd imagine the off-field stuff is part of the reason why Auburn had it written into his contract that he had to relinquish rights to his social media account before accepting the job. They also needed to consult with a PR person before making the hire. So,
of course.
Again, there's a duality there. There's two things going on at once. There is the on-field stuff, which for sure has been successful. There's the off-field stuff, which is definite baggage. Personally, if we're talking about the low-risk nature of the Luke Fickell hire, personally, I don't think the Hugh Freeze risk is worth taking, because Auburn has had 2 years of relative instability now, preceded by what? 3 years of more instability, in a sense, of uncertainty, let's say, when they finally got rid of Gus Malzahn. They knew they wanted to get rid of him, but it's the will they, won't they thing that took forever until it finally came to fruition. Now they're hiring a guy who they're obviously banking on him cleaning up his act, but they did have to hire the PR person to tell them how to feel first and what to do in light of the announcement. On some level, there is the Taylor Swift, Jake Gyllenhaal knowing somebody is trouble before they walk in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying people don't deserve second chances, Dan, but I'm just saying that Auburn does not feel like the program, given where it's been lately, that should take that risk at this moment. So, Kelsey, I can't tell you how to feel, but if it were me, I wouldn't be pleased.
Auburn does not feel he's a grown-up, right? Auburn, and this is interesting, because there are certain radioactive coaches that you can say to yourself, sure, this guy is a problem, but you know he gets results.
Right.
Sure, if we hire Urban Meyer, it's not a great look, but there's nothing about Urban Meyer on the sideline and recruiting and running a program football wise that would lead you to believe that that program would be anything less than the absolute best it could be. If Urban Meyer took over Texas Tech, if he took over Washington State, if he took over Cal, if he took over NC State, whatever, they'd win 10 or 11 games every year.
Yeah.
And so that's the deal you make because you know Urban Meyer is that good of a college football coach, or at least we believe that to still be the case. Hugh Freeze?
Yeah.
Hugh Freeze is where, like, he had a nice little run. I don't care about the NCAA stuff. I, you know, things have changed in terms of sure. NIL and, sure. you know, the way money and recruiting, and even though it isn't necessarily the spirit of NIL, that bothers me to a much lesser extent. I'm okay with a lot of those things. But off the field, and the fact remains that Auburn, I'll reiterate this, with the social media stuff, with whatever, it's clear that Hugh Freeze does not have a command in a daily sense of being a grown-up. And this is already a place that has difficulties behind the scenes with power struggles and with who's making decisions and paying attention to perhaps the wrong boosters to make big decisions or have sway. And now you're throwing this little cherry bomb into the mix?
Yeah.
I know that Lane Kiffin was their first choice. And it's very clear that Auburn is not a place a lot of good coaches want to continue their career and continue to build. That much is clear, and that much has come to pass over these past few years, where they have to go so far outside of, you know, the SEC universe and hiring Brian Harsin and Gene Chizik, all these guys. Gus finally made sense for them. But Hugh Freeze? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what this does. We talk about a ceiling with Wisconsin. What does this mean for Auburn's ceiling? Like, the offense will get better, probably. They'll recruit better, but, like, you know it's going to blow up probably sooner rather than later. They already don't trust him. Yeah. So, great. Cool job, guys.
I just don't think it's worth the risk. I think on some level, like, everybody wants to win. You're in the SEC, and it's gotten harder to win. So I understand the value in taking a risk. I just don't think this is the risk
right.
that they should be taking at this time, given where the program's been. You want a sure thing. You want a slam dunk. I don't think you want to have to deal with that baggage. You don't have to worry about that. And again, I come back to what you said. For Hugh Freeze, it's one thing if it's Urban Meyer.
Right.
Hugh Freeze? We're gonna do this for Hugh Freeze?
By the way, the negative recruiting fodder that LSU, Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, everybody, Tennessee, has with Hugh Freeze and Auburn, with everything that happened with Brian Harsin, now everything that has already happened in the Hugh Freeze universe.
The Hugh Freeze universe.
The Hugh Freeze multiverse.
The multiverse of Hugh Freeze.
The cinematic universe
of
Hugh
Freeze. The multiverse of madness.
It's a Costco-sized shopping cart of ammunition. That's all.
Alan on Patreon wants to know, who leaves their current job first, Matt Rhule or Kirk Ferentz, Dan?
Kirk Ferentz.
Leaves before Matt Rhule?
Yes.
Wow. Why?
Matt Rhule has an 8-year deal, and Kirk Ferentz, you know, in the next year or two is liable to retire. I think.
You think?
I think Brian Ferentz was a clear succession plan with the ascension and the hiring and promotion to offensive coordinator and sort of clearing the path that Kirk Ferentz has that kind of cachet in Iowa City. I don't think Matt Rhule is, if Penn State opens up in a year or two, because that's the thing that everybody's pointing to, that's the dream job, that's the dream gig. I don't know. I'm also of the mind that, like, things change, right? That he's in the Big Ten at a major place with major job security, that I don't think he would jump after a year or two to Penn State. Maybe 4 or 5 years, sure. But I think it's more likely that Matt Rhule is given such a long leash and such an opportunity to rebuild the roster and rebuild the culture, that I'm a believer in that Nebraska is such a believer, given that deal, that I would say it's likelier, because I don't think Matt Rhule is getting any NFL attention anytime soon.
No.
That it's a Kirk Ferentz retirement before Matt Rhule leaves Lincoln.
If James Franklin pulled a stunner and decided to go to Colorado, Matt Rhule would rip up that contract and go to State College tomorrow. Matt Rhule has a
history. Well, that timing is different, but yes, I'm saying a year or two. Yeah.
He has a track record of not being anywhere for that long, right?
True.
4 seasons has been his max. I'm telling you right now, he will be the next coach at Penn State whenever that comes to fruition. And I don't think it's going to be longer than 5 years. I think Matt Rhule will have an opportunity, if he wants to, to leave for State College. The Kirk Ferentz thing, you know, maybe I just lived too long through the Joe Paterno era. Right. If we separate out sort of the scandalous aspects of Paterno and how he eventually departed Penn State, there was a good long time even before that when you had this fissure, in a sense, within the Penn State community, the people who loved Joe Paterno and didn't want him to ever leave. And then the people who were like, enough of this already. We're running up the middle every play. The offense is the same as it's been for the last 20 years. Something's gotta change. Also, in that instance, we had what, at least on the surface, for a brief moment in time, looked like a succession plan, handing it off to his son, which, again, went bust. That did not work with Jay Paterno. So there's a lot of similarity, again, on one level, right? One very specific level between Ferentz and the way things went down at Penn State with Paterno in the late stages of his career. I just think that Ferentz is so much the honorary governor of the state that he's only going to leave on his terms whenever he sees fit. It's going to be really hard to push him out. And knowing that there is already this track record with Matt Rhule not staying in one place for too long, I think it's 100% Matt Rhule is the answer here. 100% Matt Rhule.
How old is Kirk Ferentz?
I don't know.
He's
not 30. I can
look
it up.
Kirk Ferentz's age. 67 years old. He's going to be 70, and I'm going to do some quick math. Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, 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 beep, boop, boop. 3 years.
No.
I don't know, man.
I think the answer is Rhule, but let's ask another thing about Rhule here that came to us from Keston on Twitter. Do you think Nebraska can make a bowl game in Rhule's first year, or are they cursed to lose forever? Nothing's forever, Keston. They're not cursed. They've had a bad run here. It sucks as a Nebraska fan. I want Nebraska to do better. But here's what I'd say about Matt Rhule. If we're looking at track record, the track record for Rhule has been that he's been terrible in each of his previous two college jobs in the first season. And then he followed it up with a 500 campaign, and then he followed it up with 10 wins or more. So it's a pretty quick turnaround. He's definitely got this track record for doing a really good job within 3 years. The difference, I think, is that Nebraska's in a much better place than both Temple and Baylor. Mm-hmm. Baylor was decimated after Art Briles, and Temple sucked all the time. All the time, with the exception of...
So who did he take over for? Did he take over for Al Golden? Who did he jump in for?
I don't recall the exact state of affairs, but he was like 1-11 his first year at Temple. It was a really bad season. So my only point here with this is that Nebraska is not Temple. It's not Baylor. There is more talent here. I took a look at the schedule in 2023. They could go 6-6 with that. They go 7-5 with that. I think it's gettable. You know, there's a lot of things that he needs to fill in and improve in very short order, but he can absolutely go 500 with that schedule next year. So I think it's doable. I don't think they're going to go 2-10. I think it's doable, Keston, but you know, obviously it's very early days here in the Rhule era at Nebraska. And, you know, we need to see who's playing quarterback. We need to see what he's going to bring to bear with respect to coordinators and so on and so forth.
Well, okay. So first of all, it was Steve Addazio for 2 years. He took over a 4-7 Steve Addazio Temple program when Addazio, I think, got the job.
That's right. That's
from
right.
From Temple. It is a, in terms of bowl season one, I think it's tough. I think we'll know pretty quickly in terms of how aggressive Nebraska wants to be in the portal. This is shaping up to be the biggest and most expansive transfer portal in the history of 3 years of portals. But we're already seeing big names, or already big name rumors. So I can only imagine the medium names and the little names are going to be vast as well. Nebraska needs to be a player in the portal every year.
Yeah.
For a while. And so depending on, you know, we got to see who you mentioned, quarterback, what the staff looks like and how active they are in filling in gaps. I, you know, a lot of teams, and I even know my team, I think took two defensive linemen from Nebraska last year and their defensive line coach. It's going to be different because, as we're seeing everywhere, with so much coach movement comes even more portal movement. And that doesn't always happen right away. Sometimes a lot of that roster will give the new guy a year and say, all right, this isn't the place for me. This guy didn't recruit me, whatever. So I almost think year one might be better than year two.
Yeah.
That there's going to be so much change. But no, I think if you can build a defense and you can build a little bit of depth through the portal, Nebraska should be bowling, if not year one, year two.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We got a question here from Nick on Instagram.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're talking about the portal, which is why I thought of this question. He wants to know if I'm prepared for Notre Dame quarterback Cade McNamara. Next season, Cade McNamara. So entered the,
where's he from? He's from Nevada?
He's from Nevada. Where's he from? Yeah, he's from Nevada. But it brings up a really interesting point and also a totally new perspective for me.
Mm-hmm.
The portal era is relatively new.
Yeah.
You know, at least this much activity in the portal is only like 2 years old, right? This has not been a thing that's been with us all that long. I got to say, as a fan of a program that we know going into next season is going to need a quarterback, all of these announcements about guys entering the portal are very, very exciting. I've never been more excited about the transfer portal than I am right now as a Notre Dame fan. And that's a change for me because for so long, you know, it's been you kind of know who the next guy up is going to be. And even the Jack Cohn thing, I bemoaned Jack Cohn, but Jack Cohn is pretty good in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
I got to say, I'm very excited about all of these possibilities. I hope they can shoot higher than Cade McNamara.
Right.
However, even Cade McNamara is a huge upgrade over what Notre Dame had this year with Drew Pine. So again, I've been making the joke. I'm only half joking, Nick. I hope Marcus Freeman's leaving his card on all of these lockers of opposing quarterbacks. Like, hey, we've got an opening in 2023. Stop on by, whether it's Cade McNamara or who else did you say is available? Malik Hornsby, he's available.
Yeah.
You know, there are all these names that are going to be entering
Brett
the portal.
Gabbert from Ohio, I think from Ohio. Well, not from Ohio, excuse me, from Miami of Ohio, I believe. I hope I didn't get that wrong. Okay, so you can only be your authentic self.
Yeah.
You are a Notre Dame fan. You are a Penn State fan. You are a fan of the beneficiaries of the portal, the recipients.
That's right. That's
the,
right.
You're getting the manna from heaven from the portal, right?
Not the Pittsburgh Pirates scenario that we discussed.
Well, no,
in the
it's more like you are not a Memphis fan, right? You are not an FAU fan. You are not a James Madison fan. You know that if anybody starts, you're not an Eastern Washington fan. I had an incredible 2015 because of Vernon Adams, right? Probably wasn't as fun that year to be an EWU fan, although I think you had Cooper Kupp, so that's not bad. That's not a bad. And he had like 260 yards in Autzen Stadium. It's exciting from a national perspective when you don't root for a team who loses or gains somebody important, right? If you happen to root for a team whose roster is consistently gutted, or at least the top of your roster is gutted or is almost gutted, it kind of sucks.
That sucks. That really does
suck. I'm sure it sucks for those coaches too. I'm sure it like even more so than like if you're Dan Lanning or Marcus Freeman or whatever, you know, you're going to lose guys, but you know, you're going to gain guys as well. that there is a transactional nature to Thanksgiving through MLK, whatever, in January. So I think it's fascinating. And I think there will be more to come in terms of how, from an administrative perspective, things are dealt with the portal. Everybody sort of rushed to be pro player and say, well, of course they can play right away. They should have the freedom to move. Coaches move. That's all reasonable. That's all. But, and I don't want to say guardrails, because I just think it's difficult to institute a one rule applies to all type thing. But I wonder if we're going to see more and more conversations about, yes, all of this is good. You can transfer. But here's how that's going to work moving forward, right? And be more specific. And I know, you know, that conversation has come to NIL and, you know, just how everything, how the gears and pulleys should operate in a way that's beneficial to as many people as possible. Because I don't know, man. It hurts college football on a certain level to see this kind of movement because it dampens your excitement for your own team, knowing that you're going to lose a bunch of people. And I think it weakens your connection to the team, knowing that that's possible for a lot of teams. Obviously, if you're Alabama, it just makes everything great. But also, I don't know. Here's my zag with the portal. I'm very excited to see who enters the transfer portal and where everything goes, where players go, where, you know, who's the new coach that recruits super well out of the portal, and or who's the guy that loses, you know, and a fifth of their roster to the portal, something like that. What if this is maybe a third baked? It's not even half baked, Ty. What if we said, yes, you can transfer and you can go and you can play immediately and you enter the portal and it's a more organized structure? What if it were one and done? What if you just get a year? You're transferring from a school. You get to play right away. 1 year. You get hurt in the first four games in the same way. You can apply for an injury waiver. You get the full, you get to, you know, have the opportunity to get your degree, but you only get to play. You get 1 year of eligibility and sort of make it, you're not punishing anybody.
It's very hall passy.
It's a little bit hall passy.
Yeah.
And so then you're saying, if you want to transfer after your freshman year, good luck, because then you're just going to have to train for a year if you think you're NFL quality. And maybe there's exceptions if your coach leaves or something like that. I think, but that to me is interesting. Not punishing players for transferring on the front end, but just saying, here is what your eligibility window now looks like.
Yeah, I mean,
if you want to transfer with immediate eligibility.
What I was going to say is I think we are going to a universe in which every fan of college football, it would be advisable to have a group of five team that you like and a power five team that you like so that you cover both your bases, because
I agree.
It's very clearly going to a point where, you know, some of the players at prominent group of five schools, there will be incentive for them to look and see what's available in the power five level. And it sucks.
Right.
And, you know, we don't have to bemoan that more than we have to, but that's where things are headed. And so make sure you cover your bases if you like the sport, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Look, right. Maybe it's 2 years. Maybe you get 2 years. Maybe you get 1 year. I don't know, though, man.
All right. Let's go over to Adam on Twitter. Did Dabo try and fail to outdo Shane at Beamer Ball? A couple unusual for Clemson special teams plays that backfired. See a kickoff return huddle fumble and a DJ Pooch kick touchback. Came off as arrogant and helped South Carolina win the game. So was Dabo trying to be too cute in that 31-30 loss in the Palmetto Bowl against South Carolina, Dan?
I think part of it is you save trick plays for big games.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think it's him saying, little old South Carolina, let's just screw around and do a couple of unorthodox things on kick returns or whatever, on pooch punts. I think you save that for those big moments. You save the double passes. You save the, you know, Michigan handing the ball off to, was he a backup linebacker in at fullback when he popped it over with a jump pass? You save it. You save the unexpected for those big moments against opponents you respect. So I don't look at it as arrogant. I just look at it as failed, right? That if that little huddle, you know, who has the ball, hot potato thing works on the kickoff return, we're looking at it as genius.
Yeah.
And so there are some plays that you can look at on the face and like, that does seem kind of silly, even if it worked. And maybe that qualifies for that. But also, and I've been consistent with this, I like aggression. I like risks. I like thinking differently. You know, take a swing. If it ends up looking weird and not working out, which that didn't, but it was because of a fumble, not because of that actual, yeah, I think, formation. So be it. Take swings. Fail. Be wrong. Look foolish. It's better than being an Iowa fan.
It's better than being an Iowa fan. Here's the question I have, though. Did he have to do that? They need to do that. I mean, it's always easier in retrospect to say when a play blows up, oh, you didn't need to do that. You didn't need to go for it on fourth down from your own 29, Oregon. You didn't need to go for two in that specific, weird, mathematically curious instance, Brian Kelly, which we've seen him do in his time at Notre Dame, not so much LSU. You didn't have to do that. You could have done something else and still won. That would be the question I would ask, right? Did he really have to do that to beat South Carolina?
You don't have to do anything.
You don't have to do anything. I get that. But that I think is the spirit of the question. Did he really have to do that? I don't think it's arrogant. I think it's probably more along the lines of what you're describing, which is we've got these trick plays. They've been in the quiver all year. We're saving them for a big spot in a rivalry game. Now we're going to roll them out there. So I get that. Also, the hidden benefit, not just of what you see on the field, is if a trick play works, even if it doesn't go for a big play, those are the types of things that tend to build morale within the ranks, within your program.
Sure.
Players look forward to seeing those plays rolled out there in the wild on game day. So there is added benefit to doing it. It just didn't work here. And I don't think they needed to do it when they did, but it certainly wasn't arrogant.
Yeah, I don't think, look, this is just, it's a personal thing, right? If you believe football should be played a certain way and to not get silly and fancy and whatever, that's your worldview and you're free to have it. Whether it's a fourth down call, whether it's a trick play, whether it's the moment for the trick play, we can question a number of things. But in terms of fourth down calls and aggression and, you know, I think Bill Connolly wrote about this. What Ryan Day is being criticized for is the opposite, but the same of what Dan Lanning is being criticized
for.
Right.
Right.
That you're like, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But also context matters. And Ohio State should have been aggressive in that big moment, in those big moments against Michigan, a Michigan team who was not going away, who was giving Ohio State everything it could handle. And in the context of Dan Lanning going for it from his own 29, one, they've been very good on fourth down this year. Two, couldn't stop anybody for the last 4 or 5 weeks, other than Utah, I guess. And three, their punter just dropped the ball on their own goal line.
That's
and
right.
So he went into the season as backup or third string punter or something like that. So they didn't have a lot of confidence in Oregon being able to flip the field. So I don't look at risky maneuvers in terms of the results. I was like, I look at risky maneuvers as like, okay, you're going for it on fourth down. What's the intention with this play? What's the creativity involved in this play? Are you doing something that has never worked and it seems riskier than you need to be in the way that you're doing things? So maybe you say, okay, that Clemson return huddle thing was risky in that.
Return huddle thing. I love it.
The return huddle thing is risky in that. No, I don't think anybody has really done it, at least recently, successfully and whatever. I'm just not going to criticize them for being aggressive and trying. Now you say, OK, let's do like the fake handoff as a guy's swinging behind, you know, the fake end around thing, kick return or laying down in the end zone. There are any number of things you can do. I always enjoy the like two punt returners back and one guy gives like the fake
one guy acts
catch
like
motion.
It's coming to him. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's caught elsewhere on the field and totally fools the punt team. But I'm not results oriented with this.
Okay.
I'm manner oriented, but I'm pro aggression and I'm good with it. Next question.
Let's go to the next question here. Very quickly. Yeah. We were talking about South Carolina. Gary from Twitter,
please.
As a Gamecocks fan, I'm super excited about what I saw in the last two games. From your studies and observations, it really makes us sound important. Thank you, Gary. How often does a good end of season lead to continued success versus momentum just dying off with the off season? So look, I don't have the numbers here. I don't have numbers. I'm sure Bill Connolly has numbers that would back this up one way or the other. That said, this is like my favorite thing to look at in the offseason.
Yeah.
I go by this. This is what I go by. Totally. And I'll go by this going into bowl season. I think it's very useful as a tool for picking confidence pools, which we will be doing over at afterballers.com. But I really believe in momentum. And
I know you do.
I think it's a thing that you can use as an effective tool to gauge how a program's going to do in the following season. South Carolina actually is a very good example of it this season. South Carolina finished 8-4 this year. Great mm-hmm. season. They closed out in dramatically impressive fashion, beating two top 10 teams. What did they do at the end of last season? Well, they were lucky to get into a bowl game. They went to the Duke's Mayo Bowl. They won. Shane Beamer had the vat of, you know, almost got a concussion getting the Mayo dumped on his head. But nonetheless, they were able to hold up the Duke's Mayo Bowl trophy. They took that momentum into the offseason. They were aggressive in the portal, which of course helped, but it all built to a point where now they're 8-4. They're going to go to a good bowl game. They had two really impressive wins here to close out the season, and it feels as if it is just building on itself. I think that's important.
Sure.
You've heard me talk about it ad nauseum in the early days of Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, some of those early teams, right? The momentum that they took with them into a bowl game throughout the latter half of a season, it built into the beginning part of the next season. Eventually, sure. They got that flywheel going, not to sound too markety, but, you know, I think it helps. I think it all builds on itself. So I would much rather be South Carolina going into 2023 than I would say Miami.
Yeah.
What's the state of Miami right now, right? There was just a thing you sent me. They couldn't even get students to hop on the bus to come to the stadium for Miami games. So that would be the opposite of positive momentum. It might take a while for Mario to build it up, and I believe still that he will.
Okay.
But I'd much rather be South Carolina with just
two different circumstances.
Two different.
In terms of a second year coach. Yeah.
Much, much different. But the trajectory of one does not necessarily equal that of the other.
So I think maybe typically in years past, 10, 15 years ago, what you're saying probably is true. But South Carolina just had their offensive coordinator hired away by Matt Rhule. Yes, Marcus Satterfield, I believe. Mm. So as assistants are more mobile, as so much changes year to year because of the portal, because of early NFL declarations, because of just changes to the sport in general, I think it's harder to say this is how we finished. This is how we're going to continue to be. Now, if there is relative stability within your program and you bring back a good chunk of players and you bring back a good chunk of coaches and you add guys who fit in well in the locker room and the culture, I think you're probably largely right. It's easier to win when you're happy than it is to win when you're dysfunctional. And it seems like if things are somewhat consistent within the program and you win near the end of a year, you at least go into the next season in a good place. But also, guys just get hurt, right? Guys just fumble the ball at inopportune times. And so all of the pieces can be there. And then the universe says, like, well, you won that game 28-27 last year. You're losing it 28-27 this year. And so there's too much with football that's up in the air. And there's too small a sample size to me. Whereas, like, you look at the NBA with 82 games. If a team finishes really, really well in their last 20, even if they don't make the playoffs or something like that, and that team is coming back the next year and that coaching staff is coming back the next year, I would generally feel better about an NBA team finishing strong than a college football team. Just because there's so many moving pieces that even if there's harmony in the locker room, even if everybody's feeling good, I don't know, schedules are so variable that I just sort of try and fail, but try to take each season as its own living, breathing thing.
Yeah.
And then throw it out and move forward. Like, what did we think about last year with Arkansas, right?
Yeah.
KJ Jefferson emerges as this incredible
thing. That's a good point.
Sam Pittman is his revelation, finally gets this opportunity at a big place, you know, energizes things. They hit the portal hard. They beat Penn State, right? In the bowl game.
Yeah.
They beat a top tier team in front of everybody in a medium to large size bowl game. I forget which one it was exactly. You know, they send Treylon Burks. He's one of the best three receivers in the country to the NFL. I think he's good in the NFL. Like, there's so much positive about Arkansas moving into 2022. KJ Jefferson gets hurt. Defense falls apart. They lose an all-SEC caliber safety early on. And the season is just kind of a mess. They have the Texas A&M opportunity and they doink it to lose. Like, all of the good juju that was happening in Fayetteville kind of quickly evaporated through just football things. And so that's why, and that's an example. That's not an exception that proves anything, but that's what I would go back to when I think about momentum heading into an offseason.
Fair enough. We've got a few more questions here before we flip it over to the Patreon exclusive portion of this here Q&A, Dan. While I am reading this question, I want you to pull up on your computer.
Okay.
On your touchtone keypad.
Would love to.
The standings for both the SEC and the Big Ten.
Okay, I have it already. I always have standings up when we record shows just because I'm stupid and I need to refer things.
As
refer
do I. Things. A terrific question from AJ Morse 4 on Instagram.
Ooh, let's hear it.
SEC versus Big Ten challenge.
Okay.
Line them up 1 through 14 and have them play.
Okay.
What happens? So here's what we're going to do. We have not pre-rehearsed this, obviously.
No.
I want you to list out, as you've got the standings in front of you, I want you to list out number 14 versus number 14. We're going to quick pick who wins. I will keep track of the tally here, whether it's SEC, whether it's Big Ten. And we're going to give AJ very quickly, rapid fire. We're not going to go into like deep-seated analytical stuff on any of these games, but we're going to give him very quickly the results on who wins that challenge between the SEC and the Big Ten.
All right, so Vanderbilt is as promising as those last late couple wins were. They gave up the most points in the SEC, 0-5 against ranked teams, or at least Texas A&M with the same record, 3-2 against AP ranked teams,
right,
weirdly enough. Vanderbilt against
Northwestern?
Yeah, Vandy, Northwestern.
Vanderbilt's beating Northwestern.
I think I would take Vandy there. Yep.
Okay, what's next?
I guess we'll go, just in terms of what I'm seeing here, I guess Auburn.
Okay.
At 13.
Sure.
Against whom? Rutgers?
I think so. I think it would have to be. Yeah.
I would take Auburn.
I would definitely take Auburn. Right. So that's two for the SEC. Next up, the next worst team, I think, in the Big Ten would probably be Indiana.
Indiana A&M.
Probably go A&M, right?
Yeah. 17-13 A&M. Sure.
All right. Next worst in the Big Ten is either, well, it's probably Nebraska. I was going to say either Nebraska or Michigan State, but it's Nebraska. Who is next up for the SEC?
Either Arkansas or Mizzou. Who won that game at the end of the year?
Mizzou.
I believe it was Mizzou.
So we'll say Arkansas?
So we're going to say Arkansas.
I take Arkansas.
Arkansas over who? Sorry, I missed what you said.
Over Nebraska.
I think I would take Arkansas over Nebraska as well. Nice finish for Nebraska, though.
Michigan State would be the next one up here on the totem pole.
Yeah.
Michigan State, they would have Mizzou.
They would either have Mizzou or Florida. Who won the Mizzou-Florida game this year? I think Florida won that.
Florida won that. So we'll say Mizzou.
Yeah.
I mean, Mizzou plays defense.
They do.
And Michigan State is kind of a mess down the stretch. So I think I'd probably take Mizzou again. Another SEC team.
I think I would take Mizzou. Yeah.
SEC's 5-0 here as we work from the bottom.
Yeah.
Let's keep going. All right. Let's do this quickly.
Please.
Next up on the Big Ten side, I would say, is probably Wisconsin.
So now we're saying Florida or
Wisconsin. Florida, Wisconsin is what I think we decided on.
Yeah. So Florida. Florida, Wisconsin. I think I'd Florida finished the season basically demolishing South Carolina, throwing a lot, but coming up short against Florida State, losing to Vandy, whatever you want to say, as a freak loss, comfortably beating A&M. I don't think if you're going to look at Florida as a weakness team, it's their defense. I don't think Wisconsin's good enough.
That's the thing. I don't think,
Wisconsin
can score. All right. 6-0 SEC. Next up for the Big Ten is probably, let's say, Maryland.
Okay, so above Florida, we'll say it's Kentucky at 7-5.
Maryland against Kentucky. I'd probably pick Maryland. I think Kentucky is 1-2-3 Cancun.
Somebody asked, by the way, the difference between pack it up, pack it in, yeah. 1, 2, 3.
They're the same thing. They're the same thing, Jason.
I think 1, 2, 3 Cancun is you're already gone. I think pack it up, pack it in is in the process of packing.
Okay.
That's what I take.
Two different stages of
giving
Kentucky,
up. Kentucky, Maryland, an incredible basketball matchup historically. I go
Maryland. Kentucky's out of it.
So Maryland got shut out by Penn State from where Will Levis transferred. That means nothing. Nothing is matter. I'm going to take... We're talking all neutral site games?
Yeah.
I might take Maryland there.
All right, we'll take Maryland there. We'll agree. Yeah. Okay. 6-1 in favor of the SEC. Very quickly, okay. Let's go. We're halfway
let's
through.
Go.
Let's keep going. Next up, Minnesota.
Minnesota. Oh, okay. And then my team. I guess Minnesota Minnesota. So South Carolina or Ole Miss. We will go Ole Miss because South Carolina 3-2 against ranked teams. Ole Miss 1-1.
100% taking Ole Miss there.
Yeah.
Next up.
So next will be South Carolina.
South Carolina against, I guess, Iowa. That's an interesting matchup.
I might take Iowa there on a neutral field.
I'm going to take Iowa. We'll give it a Big Ten one. All right, moving on very quickly. We've got 7-2 for the SEC. Let's go over to...
I don't even know. South Carolina, with the way they finished, I'm seduced a little bit.
Let's just give one to the
Big Ten. Charitable. Okay.
Illinois.
So Illinois or Mississippi State.
Oh, God. I'm inclined to go Illinois.
What did Illinois finish against AP teams?
I mean, their November was terrible. They were 1-3.
Yeah, they're pretty mistake prone. I'm going to go Mississippi State there.
All right, you talked me into it. We'll go Mississippi State. 8-2 in favor.
Yep.
Purdue is next.
Purdue against, I guess, Alabama.
Okay, so we go Alabama.
Yep.
9-2. Next up would be Penn State.
Penn State would be, depending on who you would allow to start at quarterback, Tennessee.
I mean, right now it would probably be Penn State.
Although I guess we could flip-flop Tennessee-Alabama. Tennessee's 7th, Alabama's 6th, which is weird considering they played each other and are both 10-2. So Tennessee against Penn State, you said?
Yeah. We'll go Penn State.
Who's starting a quarterback for Tennessee?
Joe Milton.
So they play this game tomorrow?
Yeah, Penn State.
I might go Penn State with the current state of the Tennessee defense.
And then we've got Ohio State and Michigan as our final two.
So Ohio State, Michigan. And so then you would have Ohio State, LSU.
I take Ohio State.
LSU, by the way, ranked behind both.
Yeah.
But they won the division. So I guess we're going with LSU. Ohio State, LSU, I'd go Ohio State.
And then Georgia against Michigan.
I
still go Georgia.
Yeah.
So... the long-winded answer to the question.
So what was the final tally? 11-3, 10-4?
10-4 in favor of the SEC.
There you go.
All right. Let's do one final non-college football question here.
Ooh.
Before we cut over in a complete capacity to our Patreon world, Dan. Let's go to your favorite Thanksgiving leftover recipe, Dan. This is from Will.
Favorite Thanksgiving leftover recipe?
Your favorite Thanksgiving leftover recipe. The example being turkey chili.
Well, that's a good one. Favorite Thanksgiving. I don't know. Usually I just stuff everything onto a sandwich and it's nothing glorious.
How about a cold turkey sandwich?
Cold turkey sandwich. If you like the cranberry sauce, throw that on there. Stuffing on there. Honestly, I'll throw it in the toaster oven. There's nothing specific. I just want another Thanksgiving meal. Some stuffing and broccoli casserole and turkey if you've got it. Something I do like to use, though, for leftovers in general, which you could very easily use with Thanksgiving stuff, is instead of a sandwich to make a hash, essentially a scramble or something like that. If you got a bunch of crispy potatoes, eggs, and if you want turkey, if you don't want turkey, stuffing, all of that would be great in a hash. like hash. Some sort of scrambly hash. I'm just into, because it's that old, where do they do this? I think Rochester, New York is known for it, but they do it all over the Midwest and Northeast, like the garbage plate, where you just like have a plate full of stuff, mix it with eggs, throw a bunch of hot sauce on top, and then just don't move for the rest of the day. I think it's Rochester, New York that's famous for their garbage plate, but maybe I'm wrong about that. You can do it with a soup. You can do it with a salad. You can do it with whatever else. You can throw turkey on a pizza, of course. The other way I would do it is, you know, make a hash and then roll it up in a tortilla and make like a breakfast burrito Thanksgiving leftover thing. That would be delicious, but no. Sandwich or hash, I think, is the way.
Sandwich or hash. All right. So here is the deal, one and all.
Yes.
Going out to Verballers.com. If you go on out to Verballers.com, if you sign up, you will hear a continuous audio file of part one and two. We're going to keep going even after we hit stop here on the public feed. We would encourage you again to go out to Verballers.com and check that out. SolidVerbalLive.com. If you're going to be in the Atlanta area on Friday evening, Terminal West is where the show will be at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. As Dan said, more than enough time to come out to the show, to watch the games afterwards, maybe to come out and do tenders with Ty.
Tenders with Ty.
Come on out. SolidVerbalLive.com. SmellTysHair.com if you're a weirdo. Either way, we love you all the same here in the Verballerhood. Go on out and make sure you support us live if you like the show. We'd love to see you. Love to meet you. Love to shake your hand, Dan. That does it for part one of this here Q&A, Bruinay, as we call it.
That's true.
In the Verballer.
I did just have some coffee that was brewed this morning.
Dan, let's keep this thing going, okay?
All right. Thank you all, everybody. If you are not on Verballers.com and you're not able to listen to the real stuff,